The following episode of FOFOP is rated MA. It contains alternating hosts, a rotating roster of guests, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that it is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15 or anyone who came here looking for one of those highbrow NPR-type podcasts. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I'm Will Anderson, and rejoining me, he's the only man that I really want to talk to. Hamo Fop, Justin Hamilton. Hello.
Hello, and I have something for you.
Good. I need something. Yeah, please give me something.
You seem relieved. Now, before I do this, I just need to check with you. I'm about to pitch the greatest movie ever made. Now, if I pitch it to you, this is a form of copyright.
Absolutely,
correct?
It is. I believe so, right?
Okay.
It's on the record that you came up with it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Now,
copyright FOFOP.
Yep. You're in on this as well, because you'll be adding to this. So you're about...
When you say it protects you from being ripped off from other people, it absolutely includes me in a split of this, though. Absolutely.
Yeah. You'll be one step behind us. Okay, yeah. You'll be... I don't know if you get to speak at the Oscars, but you'll definitely be on the podium. So.
I don't want to speak at the Oscars.
No, neither do I.
I don't want to... Here's what I was going to... I want to definitely be in the background.
Yeah.
But I want to be involved.
Yeah.
I think I've spoken to you about this before, but... Like, the ideal scenario of the next stage of my career would be creative gun for hire. I would love nothing more than to be a consultant.
Yeah.
To come in and help people with their projects, like in whatever way the project needed help. Like, you know, if it needed like structural help, I could help with structure. If it needed like help with just sitting two people down to sort out their differences, I could help with that. I just want to make other people's things better and not have to do my own shit.
Yeah. And then also you get the really nice moment of being able to lean over when someone's having their moment in the sun and say, he didn't want to do that. I actually told him he should do that.
That's right. Just pushing the chess pieces around. Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is just that I want to be God, but silently acting in the background.
Yeah.
Some people not believing whether I exist or not.
Some
people thinking that I'm a completely different God.
God, the Wizard of Oz, whatever. Doesn't matter. You can take any title. All right. So I'm going to not tell you what this is.
Okay.
I'm going to just build it from the opening scene.
Great.
Right? So we open on a young African-American boy at school.
Right.
He's
could quite... Now, just a couple of notes from the studio.
Right.
Could he be a white guy?
No, not
could he be a
in
middle-aged
the slightest.
White man?
No,
we've got three Chris's already on board. So could he be a middle-aged white man instead of a...
Like, absolutely, 100% cannot be white.
I will get back to them. And not middle-aged?
Not middle-aged.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll run those notes back to the studio and see what they think.
Can't be Hispanic. Can't be Latin.
That did not come from them. They did not bring that up. So right. Not an issue. It's fine.
I'm just making a statement here.
Two notes. Middle-aged white man. That was what the notes were.
No, this is a teenage African-American boy, maybe even like low teens.
Okay.
Pretty good at studies. Leaves the classroom where he's been studying by himself.
Okay, hang on. We've got a note from the studio again. Sounds like a bit of a nerd.
Oh, he is.
Oh,
but wait for it.
Okay, all right. Okay.
So then he gets a gang of bullies that surround him, and the big bully, like the big one, smacks the books out of his hands, and then all the other kids, you know, mill around, and there's a fight on.
And now, we've just got a quick note from the studio on that. Could the bullies be middle-aged white men?
Oh, yeah, the bullies can be whatever you want.
Okay,
like, you know, let's make it a hate crime. Let's go for it. Right?
Okay, good. Great. Yeah. All right. Good. As long as we can get some middle-aged white men in here as soon as possible, we're fine.
There is going to be lots of middle-aged white men coming up.
Fine.
Like, this movie is full of middle-aged white men.
Well, that's fine. We'll put them in the trailer.
Yeah.
Get people into the studios.
Yeah.
And hope they don't freak out that they haven't seen a middle-aged white man in what is the first 90 seconds of this movie.
Let me put it this way. In about 3 minutes, middle-aged white men are going to have fucking incredible 1980s bonus with what's about to happen.
Okay,
right?
All right. Cool.
So the fight starts, and this little nerdy kid just lets fly with some fucking haymakers and smacks the shit out of this kid. And not only beats him up, But he's got form and he's got skills. He knows how to throw a punch. Next scene, he's in front of the principal. It's his teacher. He's there with his mum. And the teacher says, you know, you've got to make a choice. Are you going to attack this world with your fists or are you going to attack it with your brains? And we see that this kid makes a choice and he decides he's going to attack this world with his brains. And you see him studying.
Clearly there's a third choice, which is brains and fists.
Not for this kid.
No. Well, no, this is not brains. A binary situation. This principal has given him bad advice.
No.
It is not just your brains or your fists. It can be both your fists and your brains, as proved by none other than Muhammad Ali.
Well, it's funny that you should bring that up. You are hitting a lot of themes here. You are hitting my general vibe. This is all working out beautifully, okay. Right?
All right, cool.
So we see a montage of this kid studying. We see him go to college. We see him graduate. And then we see him on the Jimmy Kimmel show. And he's being interviewed. He's much older now. He's being interviewed. Yeah. And he's
by the way, great choice of show to be interviewed
thank you.
By. Because Jimmy Kimmel, always available for this. Very easy to lock in.
And
in fact, I've just got a knock on the door. Jimmy Kimmel's come to the office. He's heard his name be summoned, and he's happy to do it.
I'll tell you here and now, Kimmel's wrapped
what
he's in at this precise moment. Right. And it's this beautiful interview. This guy is not only a really well-renowned and successful doctor, but he's also the executive producer of this new 30 on 30 documentary.
Okay, that's why he's on Kimmel.
Yes. And the documentary also relates to his work. Mm-hmm. And the documentary.
He's a double doc. He's a doctor and a documentarian.
He's all the docs. He's even wearing docs.
Oh, he's wearing Doc Martens. That's his thing. Yeah, he's got Doc Martens. He's a doctor and he makes documentaries, which is already more character development than most Marvel movies will give you.
Yeah, and he's wearing a Doctor Who shirt. he's very cool. Matt Smith, of course. So anyway, so the interview's going well, and then they show a scene from this documentary. And the documentary is about the life of Clubber Lang after what happened to him in Rocky III. And it turns out that he had all these terrible brain injuries and he went through depression and he was discarded by the establishment. Mm-hmm. And it's a terrible story. And he eventually ended up committing suicide and as a poor, destitute person. He'd been used up by the establishment and left to rot. Mm-hmm. And this kid is the son of Clubber Lang. Mm-hmm. And we cut to Adonis Creed and his girlfriend Bianca, who are watching Jimmy Kimmel. And of course, it's on closed captions because by this movie, Bianca has gone completely deaf.
Lost all her hearing.
Mm-hmm. And they watch this and she gets really worried because Adonis is starting to show some signs. He's been the champ for a long time and she's worried about this. So she talks him into going and seeing this doctor. So the doctor runs some tests and says, look, you're fine now, but you're a couple of blows to the head from being in real danger. And so they have this really, Adonis and Bianca have this really important chat. And Adonis agrees, you know what? I want to be here for my wife. I want to be here for my child. I'm going to retire. But he's just signed a contract for 3 more fights. And this is where all these middle-aged white men come in who say, if you do not honor your contract, we will ruin you. And then they start running a campaign on social media.
That does sound like a thing a middle-aged white man would say in this scenario.
I know! So then they start running this campaign on social media to question his masculinity. They have this argument. Bianca's saying, you know, I lost my faculties through no choice of my own. I can't hear music anymore. You can't do this.
Yeah, but you have a choice.
He has to. Good. He has
That's
to follow
good,
through.
Good dramatic tension within the relationship.
Mate, you know what? Do you want some extra tension? Clubber Lang's son is played by John David Washington, so he's super fucking hot as well and super fucking cool.
Of course. So, that's the one thing the studio will not pass on. He has to be super hot and super cool.
Absolutely. And so now we have a potential love triangle. We have 3 fights throughout the movie. With each fight, a ticking time bomb. Is Adonis going to be able to get through to the end of his contract without becoming Muhammad Ali? Thank you very much. Give me the money. And then we finish with credits. Kendrick Lamar covering a song by Creed.
Okay, sure. By Creed. He'd make
it's
it
the
work.
Rap version. Yeah,
that's what
would.
I would say. Kendrick, if anyone could make it work, Kendrick would make it work. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. Yeah. And like huge opportunities for middle-aged white men to be getting in the way of all this.
Absolutely.
I can now see how many opportunities there are for us to cast middle-aged white men. So that is
so many. So many. And then it ends. Do you want to know how it ends? Of course you do.
No, well, do I though? Like, or is this something that we need to? Oh no, I suppose we need to pitch the ending for them to buy.
Pitch the ending. Yeah. So he ends up getting through. He's fine, and he retires on top. And it finishes. He and Clubber Lang's son start going on the circuit to bring in legislation to make boxing safer for all the athletes. So not only is he a hero in the ring, he's a hero outside of the ring. It's a three-peat for Creed, and it's also a sequel to the three-peat of Rocky III. It works on so many levels. Give us the money. We're happy to be paid $9 million not to make this.
How about instead?
Nah.
Like if we really want to win awards though, because you've just finished like a bit too boring and administrative for the awards.
What are you talking about? Like this is in the credits. He wins the final fight. Yeah, yeah. We finish on the final fight and then you see
he wins
the credits
the final
are going
fight
up.
And then the credits come up. Well, how about this? He starts lobbying for this legislation and we think he's okay. But right at the end, there's just a sign that he isn't. Like, you know, so.
Little twitch in the eye.
Yeah. Or he forgets where he is or just like, you know, something, just something that says that like he might have won, but actually maybe there's still that ticking time bomb inside. Because I think for the Academy Awards, if we're going to like, and this is an award film, like this is clearly award bait.
All the awards.
You want to leave them with that little gut punch that maybe he isn't okay, that maybe he did do the wrong thing and risked it all, right?
Yeah.
That's all. And that's the only note that I'm, that's my little bit of input is I feel like we need a little bit at the end where you're like, oh.
Okay, here's what
and
we
so
do.
Then you can walk away from it going, I want to believe that he's okay and he's going to be okay.
Yeah.
But there's just that other bit of you that allows that part of the story of, hang on, maybe he did risk this all and it was not worth it.
How about 30 seconds into the credits, he calls Bianca Brianna and you think, what's happened?
Perfect.
But if you hang around right to the very end of the credits, you see that same scene and then you see the cast crack up because it was obviously a blooper.
Nah, you're going to lose the award.
No, I know. No. But yeah, okay, I'm happy to add that. But anyway, back up the truck, Hollywood.
Because I think it's more truthful anyway, because the, like, from what they know about these head injuries is that the ramifications of them, like the damage, Jimmy Carr said to me on Velocity, he said, the thing that you're going to get cancelled for, you've probably already said.
Right.
Right. And I think that it's the same with boxers, that it's not those last three fights that are going to be the difference. It's some punch he's already taken early on in his career that is the ticking time bomb. And then one day it just goes off. So there is, you know, he's already like sustained massive head trauma. Like that's the truth. So I just think a little sort of nod to the fact that most likely he's still probably going to end up with serious brain injuries.
Yeah.
It's a great way to finish our award winning movie.
Yeah. I always want to finish a trilogy on an upbeat note. Yeah. But anyway, it's tasty, right?
It's good. I like it. It's very good.
Yeah. These are the things I'm thinking when I do other jobs.
Oh, that's all right. That's good. That's a good thing to be thinking.
Which white men do we want as the establishment?
Well, see, this is where you do some like great counter programming because you don't want them to be cartoonish.
No.
You don't want like, you know, those roles you'd like traditionally put like a Paul Giamatti or somebody where you immediately know, oh, great, this is going to be the, you know, the kind of the man in the middle of this that's going to ruin everything for the black people. Like, I think that you want somebody who people naturally like and let them play because they don't have to be full, you know, movie cloak villains. Dun, dun, dun. They just need to be capitalists, businessmen, people who like have a huge investment in this happening and being in a reality. And this is just the industry that they work in and the decisions they would make in that industry. Because I think you want to expose that it's the, like if you blame, this is systematic, like the problem, particularly in boxing, you know, around race and violence, but in professional sports in general, around head trauma, it's a systematic problem. It's not like there's one evil person behind it. And I think we would make a mistake as filmmakers on this project if we had just tried to make it one sort of evil person rather than exposing that the system itself is the thing that's evil. So I think you cast well-liked, charismatic middle-aged men as these actors. So the audience has a natural affinity to the actual people,
yeah,
but then has to wrestle with the fact that these people that they like and relate to are actually making these decisions that are detrimental to the character that we're following. I think that's how you cast it.
So do we have, how about a middle-aged white man that we all quite like, who's very charismatic, who you don't quite realize is essentially the bad guy in this until about halfway through when they show their true colors, and they have a dad who still owns and runs the company. So it's like a Rupert and Lachlan Murdoch kind of situation. Yeah.
Succession's very hot, so we can do that. We can sell that.
Okay. So how about for the dad, how about Harrison Ford?
For the dad, Harrison Ford? Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's fine.
We love Harrison Ford.
Yeah. And he also speaks like someone who's had a massive amount of head trauma. So I don't feel like it'll be hard for him.
We'll get him through between puffs. What am I making? Rocky. No, Creed, Harrison. Creed.
You can wear your diamond earring. It suits the character. It's fine.
Yeah. Or do we want to go? I feel like Harrison's good. What about Arnie?
No, Arnie too. I think Arnie's too Arnie.
He's too Arnie. Yeah. Harrison can still act. Arnie's always.
But also Arnie still always looks like a creature from another universe, even when he's being a human. Whereas, like, I think that Harrison Ford, you know, this beloved actor, like people love him. They love his characters.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the charisma of, like, even Indiana Jones, because if you actually watch Indiana Jones just on a reading of this character that steals, like, artifacts from, like, you know, native cultures and reappropriates them to Western museums and clearly has, like, had sex with underage people and manipulated power relationships.
Sorry, I'm taking my headphones out. I can't listen to this. I've heard this said before and I love that movie too much and I can't hear what you're saying. It hurts me.
No, but my
the facts hurt me.
My point being that this is, I mean, a man who shoots first before he, you know, like, that's the character is on paper an absolute scoundrel, like on many levels, but because of the way he's played by Harrison Ford and like the attitude of the movie, we cheer for him regardless. We just don't look at those things as being terrible things. So I think he absolutely has the charisma to play a character who is making a series of terrible decisions and then kind of have us as the audience wanting to constantly be on board with them because that's how we feel about characters that Harrison Ford plays. So I actually think it's a great bit of casting. But who's his son then?
All right. Who do we go? What do you reckon? Do we do a reunion and bring in Ryan Gosling?
I mean, Gosling wouldn't be bad, I don't think.
I love Gosling. And I think he's, you know, I think he can do a turn.
Mm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And it would because you also want that turn to be a bit devastating in the audience. You want to sit there and go, oh, Gosling. Oh, no, his dad's Harrison Ford.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, take the two of the most loved people in Hollywood and make them. This is good, though.
Yeah.
Plus, we can sell it. Now we can sell it.
Yeah. Because
before, I was really worried that you were pitching me a movie with, like,
That did not have a
whole bunch of old white guys
that I could
put on the poster. Yeah. But the great news is we now have Harrison Ford and Ryan Gosling in.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the cast can get a mention later.
Right. Yes. Like the stars, you mean. Yeah.
The people who are in most of the movie can be mentioned later.
Yeah. If we can't get Harrison Ford, I would spring for Jeff Bridges.
Oh yeah, but Jeff Bridges to me, I more easily see play like I've seen him play those sort of villainous characters before. Whereas like Harrison Ford, the thing that I like
just
is
as a backup.
But I think we say to Harrison that you get like play it like you.
Yeah,
you don't actually even need to act. And if you want to get stoned all the time, that'll actually the character's got head trauma himself. That's part of the or he's got like memory loss or like onset whatever it is. I think that'll be another nice part to the story because if the guy who's controlling everything is also suffering from some sort of side effects of memory loss. And,
oh, yeah. So we have like, a bit of sympathy or empathy for Gosling while knowing that he's the bad guy while doing...
Right.
So you know what that allows at the end? That allows Gosling to come in and be part of the celebrations because deep down he wanted Freak to score it.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. Great. More awards.
There we go.
I just won us a couple more awards.
Back up that truck with the money and the awards. You're welcome, Hollywood. We've saved you.
And also best song at the Oscars. Here's Creed and Kendrick Lamar to perform it live.
What was that song with Eyes Wide Open or something like that?
Eyes Wide Open, Creed. Yeah. Oh, man, I'm going to... They were a religious band, right? Well, he's religious too, actually. Kendrick's way up into his Jesus stuff. So
so it's not out there.
The band. Hang on.
They were definitively J-Dog supporters.
Okay, so Creed from Tallahassee, Florida. That's a great... great word Tallahassee is.
If I had a son, that's what I'd name him.
It's
Tallahassee Hamilton.
Oh, that sounds good. Tallahassee Hamilton. How would you spell Tallahassee, do you think?
Like my own way.
Okay.
Because it's my kid's name.
Well, the way they...
Is it T-A-L-L-E-H-A-U-S-S-E?
No, it's not. It's T-A-L-L-A.
Yep.
H-A-S-S-E. It's a very pleasant...
Oh, yeah.
Word to look at. It has like really, it has a lot of balance.
Yeah.
It's just like, even on the page, you're like, Tallahassee.
Yeah.
It's fun to say. It's like, anyway.
He'd be called T by his mates, and his really close mates would call him Hassie.
They were formed in 1994. Scott Stapp.
Yes.
Is the lead vocalist. Creed released.
Have you read his autobiography? Stapp right up.
Stap it. Isn't it called Stap Hammer Time? Sorry.
I've got a Stap infection.
All right. Let's find. I want to like find that where their big songs. Yeah. With Arms Wide Open.
With Arms Wide Open. Yep.
It won a Grammy Best Rock Song.
Oh, well, that's a sign of quality.
So there you go. So. With Arms Wide Open, so they do a Kendrick Lamar remix of With Arms Wide Open with Creed.
Yeah. It'll bring down the Oscars. it'll unite everybody.
I mean, I think this would work.
Yeah.
All we have to do is get Harrison Ford, Ryan Gosling, and Kendrick Lamar on board, and I reckon the rest of the tiles fall into place.
And, you know, at the Oscars, because this will take a few years before it gets made and it comes out, at the Oscars, nobody realizes it's going to happen. They do the song and they do the song the way they did originally, but they leave space for Will Smith to drop in and do Get Jiggy With It. And it's an opportunity for him to redeem himself. Sorry, I said that while you were taking a drink. So we redeem Will Smith as well.
I mean, I think that Kendrick could redeem Will Smith.
Oh, yeah.
I can just imagine that moment where, like, Kendrick's, like Creed's up the back, Kendrick's doing his, like, you know, jazz influence, like, you know, like, kind of, you know, rapping over the top, telling the story of the movie, but telling, like, classic Kendrick style. It'll be a story that you don't know if it's a story about something that Kendrick saw or experienced when he was growing up, or rapping about the plot of the movie. It'll be kind of a weird hybrid of both.
I can't and get then, hit, but I got to hit back, you know, right, those kinds of lines. Yeah.
And then he'll be like, they said, yeah. And I said, na, 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 na. And then you just hear this, na, 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 na. And then out walks Will Smith dressed as Muhammad Ali, right? From when he played Ali.
Yeah.
And then he just starts going, getting jiggy with it. And Kendrick's doing that, the champ is here. Remember they did that?
Yeah.
The champ is here.
Yeah. Great.
And they give us another Oscar. They just go for that.
Yeah, you know what we do? We win the Emmy for Best Show on TV. Mate, no, all the awards.
Glenn Close, who has won Best Actress.
Finally.
Finally.
Yeah.
She's so moved by this moment that she walks up onto the stage and hands her Oscar.
Right. Yeah, I don't need it. I don't need it. I can already see Emma Stone's face in the audience, mouth wide open, just going, can you believe what we're seeing?
This is amazing.
Yeah.
I love it.
No worries. Just get in touch, Hollywood. You can contact me through my website. Mm. We're good to go.
Yeah. Man, that is a fun movie, though. I can imagine all of that.
Yeah. So I have to tell you, because I was actually out running when I had the thought and I had to tell someone. So I called our friend Alexi Toliopoulos and I pitched it to him. And at the end of it, he said, dude, you've just ruined Creed 3 for me.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Because it's not going to be this.
You've just ruined all.
Every movie.
I mean, that's imagination is better than movies. Just like...
not necessarily. There's some good ones out there. Now, I have to ask you, because I refused to watch it, but I saw the headline. Why did Charlie not like Top Gun Maverick?
I've not seen Top Gun Maverick. I need to point this out. There's been
haven't seen a movie since 1937. It's okay. I already knew that.
I have not been to the movies since the pandemic.
Yeah.
So that is correct. Yeah, since the Spanish flu.
Yeah.
Since then I've not gone.
Been very careful.
Place. It's true. I am one of those people. I am still one of those people. And so here's what I will say. That from what he's told me about the movie, because I'm only getting this secondhand.
Yeah.
There is one particular plot line that for 2 weeks we have not been able to stop talking about, which is, and I understand that this is probably not like, you know, what this movie is or what sort of movie it is, but I've got to be honest with you. I'm now going to have to wait to make sure that I see this like in a while when I've forgotten about this conversation, because here's what it is. It's the psychology of Baby Goose.
Yeah, Rooster.
Yeah, Rooster. Which
Miles Teller.
Disappointingly, they called Rooster and not Gosling. Right. And then they could, of course, cast Ryan Gosling. That would have been
perfect.
Perfect. But perfect. Anyway.
Little known fact, Miles Teller chose his own call sign.
Okay, so Miles Teller, Rooster.
Yeah.
Rooster. Baby Gooster. So my understanding is there's a couple of scenes in the movie where essentially Gooster is dressed exactly the same as Goose was in the original movie, including like the Hawaiian shirt and the mustache, and actually sings like Great Balls of Fire on the piano. And it's just we've been talking about is the psychology of somebody who not only wants to follow in the footsteps of their dad, but literally wants to recreate like iconic moments from their dead dad's life. And what sort of twisted, morbid psychology that is. Like, I mean, I can understand the idea that like his dad died when he was very young. I can understand the idea of him, and I know there's a plot line in the movie about, you know, whether he should join the, you know, or whatever, but it's kind of like the behavior of a psychopath. Like, is this a movie about a psychopath?
Look, if you want to break it down, sure, but also, like there's more things to be worried about. Like, how the fuck is Tom Cruise 60 with that dark hair?
But Tom Cruise is 60 with that dark hair. That's what I will say. I know, but
Maverick's not dying it. In the movie, Maverick's just got dark hair.
Well, you don't know that, though. Just because there's not a scene of Maverick not dying it, we don't see scenes of Tom Cruise dying it either. But
look, I'm not even a Top Gun fan, but I feel like this has overthought it. But I am on the right podcast.
But don't you think that's weird? Like, to entirely base your entire life on your dead father, to the point where you dress like your, like, and when did he start dressing like his dead father? Right. Like, did he only start dressing like his dead father when he got to the age that it was appropriate to dress like his dead father? Or did that little, like, was he like 12 with a little mustache and a Hawaiian shirt? Or was he dressing like his dad did at 12? Did he find old photos of his dad and dress like him? Like, live your own life, man. Don't, like, your dad's dead. Don't become you. Like essentially, the point is that this is a movie about Norman Bates. Like, it's a movie about Norman Bates who, like, you know, essentially started to, like, he should be murdering people. Baby Goose should be going around murdering people because he's obsessed with becoming his dead dad.
Right.
I've not seen the movie.
No, but
that is a problem to me.
Sure. Look, when I when my dad died when I was 44, I started wearing makeup and, you know, recording my own songs and stuff like that. So, you know, so that, you know, when your dad goes, you know, you fill the void.
So this is the point. You didn't do that. And you're obsessed with David Bowie, right?
But Dad,
yeah.
Papa Bowie.
Papa Bowie. You're obsessed. And when he died, you didn't suddenly like...
You don't know.
Fashion your... I do know. I absolutely 100% do know. I was there.
Oh, so you remember this. I reckon, I'm not even a Top Gun fan, but I reckon this movie is Tom Cruise's Unforgiven and Inception all rolled into one, because you can watch the movie two ways. You can watch it literally... And you bring all the Tom Cruise baggage to the movie, and if you do it with, like, it's kind of fun. Like, it's really funny to bring that baggage to the movie, the same way it was to bring Clint Eastwood's baggage to Unforgiven. But on the flip side, there is a reading of this movie that you can watch it, that he dies at the start and the rest of it is just his last moments dreaming of how his life could have worked out perfectly and he could have put everything to bed and can shuffle off into this into the next life.
Here's what I will say. I don't really care either way, because I don't have any affection for Top Gun.
Like, no, neither do I.
I thought the original movie was absolutely fine. Like, that's an absolutely fine movie. And there's like some very entertaining scenes in it.
Yeah.
And I tried to rewatch it like a couple of years ago. And what I realized is there's some really interesting scenes in it. And then there's a lot of other stuff.
There's a lot of good playing scenes. Yeah. And then there's the movie.
A couple of good iconic moments, you know. Yeah. I feel the need for speed.
Yeah, you can ride my tail anytime.
Yeah, all those. There's some nice things there. you know. No Meg Ryan in this though, right?
No. No Meg Ryan, and it's important to
the
plot.
Do you know why? Because she's bloody dead, and Goose is wearing her skin when he gets home at night as well,
Jesus
baby Goose.
Christ.
Because he's a psychopath who dresses like his dad by day and his mum by night.
You are never going to be able to watch this film. This film is completely and utterly ruined for you. if you were going to bring back a movie from the 80s, reboot a movie, what was a favourite movie of yours? When you were growing up, you haven't watched Prey, have you?
No, I haven't. But I Charlie liked that a lot.
Yeah, it was great.
That's a good question. What about
Star Wars?
Why don't I have another crack at Star Wars? It always felt like a good story. I thought there was more stories in that universe. Why don't they explore some of those?
Like they should. Like that felt like they left a lot of fruit on the tree.
Yeah, what about... you know what my favorite one of the Star Wars spin-offs has been, without a doubt? I don't know, because I have not watched any of them.
Yeah,
I have no interest in any of them. Like, I cannot.
Yeah.
What
about a serious version of Flying High?
What was the plot? You know what I think is the thing that I would love to bring back as a TV show, but I just don't know. I've thought about this so often about who you would cast in this role, and I like go through periods where I think, oh yeah, maybe that person would be able to play them, but I still don't think anyone would be able to play them as well. But I think that Columbo is favorite thing that is ripe for a reboot, because it is counter like narrative. I've been watching some old Columbo. They've posted all, you know, they're all available online now. And the thing I love about Columbo that I kind of forgotten was the main selling point of Columbo is they show you who did it at the start. Like, we live in this entire fucking world of like, you know, whodunits. Like, there's so much true crime. There's so much crime things. We've got used to this formula that, you know, and it's my constant frustration with those serial, you know, crime dramas like a Law and Order, whatever. The formula is so like it's played out as if it's a mystery about who did it. But like, if you've watched enough of the episodes, you can work out pretty early on who probably did it.
Right.
The guest star, right?
Right.
And or you can remember how that news story played out that they've clearly based that episode on, that you're like, I reckon it's that, because that's what it was in real life.
Yeah.
So, but Columbo, they deal with all that in the first scene.
Yes.
They show you this is how it all went down. And then the rest of the episode is about Columbo, like, working that out and putting it all in place. And you actually just get to concentrate on that. You don't need the mystery of, like, I find that, like, so much of this other crime drama, because they have to constantly show you red herrings.
Yes.
Like, they just become, when the payoff comes, it's not even as interesting as it should be, because you've, you know, pursued so many red herrings that the payoff can never be good. Whereas, like, it's even a bit the same with, even though I like shows like Westworld and Lost and those sort of things, people's frustrations with those shows is often that to keep people guessing, sometimes people's guesses become more satisfying than what the eventual result is going to be, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so when people feel disappointed in the eventual result, it's not actually that the eventual result is that bad. It's their expectations were raised higher by some theory they had about what that was going to be.
Yeah.
And then eventually it can't lead up to it. So I think Columbo in storytelling, it's like, here's what went down. Now how we make this episode interesting is how Columbo solves this mystery.
Yeah.
Like, you know what he's got to solve.
Yeah.
Now you get to see how he tries to solve it. And the only problem with remaking Columbo is I do not know who could play it as well as Peter Falk played it.
Far out. He is, like, so I have just looked up a list of actors in there. What age are you thinking?
I think Columbo must have been like mid-50s, I reckon.
Right, that's what I thought as well.
I think that we imagine he's older than... But I would imagine he was probably in his mid-50s.
Is this one of those things where we'll look up his age and it'll be like a Wilford Brimley thing and you go, he's 37 in that movie?
I mean,
Wilford maybe. Brimley was like...
I'm going to...
Wilford Brimley was 60 for about 30 years.
Yeah, how old was Columbo on TV? So I'm going to say Columbo, was on, blah, blah, blah. How old was Peter Falk in the first episode of Columbo?
I'm going to say 47.
Oh, my God.
He's 22.
Oh, my God.
He's 19. How old was he? Do you want to play higher, lower?
This can't be true. Hang on. I've got to fucking, like, just, I've got to look this up, because this cannot be fucking true.
Are you about to have a self-esteem boost? Is that what's about to happen?
God. Okay. Anyway, let's go through this. Because this might get us to what I read, but I can't believe that. I'm glad I've read on, because I think that what I saw was misleading. Who would have thought on the internet that it's something you saw
on
immediately?
The internet. That's weird.
But here are some fun facts about Peter Falk and the iconic investigator Columbo. This is from Zoomer Television.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Okay, so, Zoomer.
Here we go. Yeah, okay, Zoomer. So Columbo's iconic raincoat came from Peter Falk's own closet.
Oh, great.
The iconic coat was said to be 25 years old and certainly looks it.
Yeah.
Now, in the headline on the way in, and this is why I read further, it said that Peter Falk was 25 years old in the show, and I was like, well, that just cannot be true.
Yeah.
It turns out they were talking about his raincoat. So his raincoat was 25 years old.
Right.
Wore a lot of his own clothes.
Right. If you were to be a detective, what item of clothing of yours would you wear?
A hoodie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The hoodie detective.
Yeah, just a hoodie. There's always a hoodie.
Yeah.
Peter Falk frequently improvised. That might be something to keep in mind when we're casting this, that we might need somebody who's like a good improviser.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea.
I've got someone, but keep going.
Bing Crosby was considered for the role. Interesting.
Huh.
There's a Columbo statue in Hungary.
Wow.
Peter Falk had a glass eye that led to Columbo's signature squint.
Yep.
Who directed the first episode of Columbo?
Oh, what? So it must be someone...
Very famous.
Very famous.
A very famous director.
Oh, that is tasty. It's not Spielberg, is it?
It is Spielberg.
Oh!
Steven Spielberg.
Ammo. Two thumbs up.
That's pretty amazing. hang on.
Better than that. We've got this young kid coming in to do the first episode. We think he's got a bright future. Oh, sorry, the brightest future.
How old was Peter Falk when Columbo started? That's what I'm going to say. All right. So, don't say that.
22.
He was 41.
41. Okay, great. All right. So, you know, 50s are the new 40s.
No, but they were saying that apparently at the time they were worried that he was too young to play the character. So I think the character was meant to be sort of more in his 50s.
Yeah.
But that when they saw him, they were like, oh, he can play the shit out of that. So I think he actually was a young person playing someone who was meant to be, yeah. I'm going to say, so with today's standards of how people look,
yeah,
we've got to cast someone who's kind of in their 50s, I would have thought.
Okay, I've got someone for you. I think they can play squinty. Mm-hmm. I think they can play a little bit ragged around the edges. I think they can improvise. And I think they can set up that, you know, like Columbo seems like he's not very good at his job.
Yeah.
And that's part
they
of it.
They've got to be shambolic. Yes, yeah. That's right.
All right. Owen Wilson.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I think Owen Wilson could do it.
Mm.
Easy to watch. You could easily imagine Owen Wilson's Columbo, you know, forgetting to dot the I's and cross the T's, but still coming through with the result and also being a little bit, you know, even when he gets a victory, under the radar about it.
Look, I think Owen Wilson's got it in him because Owen Wilson certainly, as we know, and I'm certainly not going to dwell on this, but from his, like, personal story, there's been some darkness, right?
Yeah,
like,
you know, there's
been some times where, you know, things have felt, there's a darkness in him that I think if you could unlock in a creative sense,
yeah,
like to offset like his natural comedic stuff,
because
you don't want this character to be too comedic, and that would be your only like note on this. But if you could kind of find that real life darkness and combine it with like his comedy, I think maybe it would be something that would be very, that you could get him interested in. Like there's a reason for him to do it, but there's also, I can see that maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Prestige, like a prestige kind of, you know, 8 episodes a season kind of thing. And maybe there's an overarching mystery, but there's one that he solves each episode.
Yeah, no, it's definitely got to be an episode to episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got to be standalone, but with a thread.
There can be a thread.
Yeah.
But I also think there could not be a thread. Like, I honestly believe there could not be a thread. Maybe it could just be good individual episodes. Like, I understand the idea of, like, their need. Like, I mean, the thread is Columbo, and there is part of, like, his story is probably the thread. Like, you don't want him to be the exact same character that he is in every sort of episode. Like there's been an Etch-a-Sketch and we're starting all over again. I think that you definitely want to see an evolution in his story, but I'm not sure that you need like a meta, like mystery to be, because again, I feel all this shit gets in the way of like shows when they're trying to do that as well. I'm like, just, here's the premise. Here's us, you know, solving the premise. Come back next week.
Well, maybe, the thread is just the emotional journey of Columbo maybe he's having trouble with his mortgage, you know, and stuff. Like it's very human, relatable stuff while he's being really good at his job.
I mean, I think so. Like, I think that could work.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty happy with Owen Wilson. And then the other one was Jeremy Renner, who I thought would have knocked it. Sorry.
I kind of thought that Mark Ruffalo might be able to do it, but there's just because he's got the look. Like I can definitely see that sort of shambolic and he's played kind of like, you know, detective style characters where I could go, he can do humor. Like the Marvel movies have shown that he can like do funny as well.
Yeah. But I like Mark Ruffalo, but there's something I feel like Owen Wilson can probably infuse every scene. Like I think Mark Ruffalo can be intense and he can be funny, but I think Owen Wilson can sometimes thread the needle with
I mean, it'd be more interesting to see. Like it would be if you could reinvent Owen Wilson, which is kind of what you want to do. You're not buying, you know, comedy high-pitched voice Owen Wilson. You're saying here's an opportunity for you to do something that takes all the skills that you have, but also takes you to a new place. And people are like, fuck, did you see that thing?
Yeah.
Have you seen Columbo with Owen Wilson?
Oh.
It's fucking amazing. I thought it was going to be terrible, but it's like Owen Wilson is just like stunning. And this show is so good.
Yeah, it's the TV show that you want to become evangelical about, pushing it. When everyone starts watching it in season three, you're a little bit, I fucking told you.
I mean, at the start, you'd just be like, this is our strategy. People are going to hate whoever we cast anyway.
Absolutely.
So fuck it, we'll take a risk. Owen Wilson. Owen Wilson is Columbo. Like all the headlines in the trades. Fork no. You know, Columbo would be not just one more thing. You know?
Yeah.
Right. Put your raincoats out, everybody. Like there'll be all these Twitter things and Reddit forums of like how they're going to ruin Columbo. And then it turns out it's just really fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of awesome remakes of things, can I ask if you've watched any of the remake of A League of Their Own?
Oh, no, I have to be honest. I didn't even know there had been a remake. Yeah. Oh, no, you mean the baseball?
The baseball.
Movie?
Is that what it's called? A League of Their Own.
Yeah. No, I did know that had been remade. Sorry, for some reason I had something else in my head. What's it like?
Mate, it is one of my favorite TV shows I've watched this year, without a doubt.
Actually watched. Yeah, right.
It's so good. It's only 8 episodes. It's like what things are now, you know. It's a shorter run, and it is so Abby Jacobson from Broad City, who I adore. Like I just think she's fucking amazing. So that already had me interested. I was like, okay, I'm really interested that this was, because after Broad City, basically they just had the opportunity to do whatever the fuck they wanted. And this was what she wanted to do. So I was that's enough. I am enough to see what you're going to do with this. And it goes back and it tells, because like A League of Their Own was based on a real thing that happened, you know, the Women's Baseball League that, you know, during the war. And it goes back and it kind of tells the story that you're familiar with, but it actually tells a completely different story at the same time, which is a much more realistic story.
Okay.
Which is, it goes back there and it looks at, so if you're telling a story about women in that era trying to play a man's sport, then the big issues are clearly race, gender, and sexuality. Because of course, a lot of the women who were playing in the, you know, playing baseball, you know, professional baseball in that era would have, of course, been, as we've seen in women's sports, you know, generally, like there's a high percentage of, you know, queer or queer identifying people. And so it goes back and tells those stories. But there has never been a better representation, in my opinion. And this is very much my opinion. Like, but I've seen queer people also say the same thing, because I was super interested to, like, you know, see what the reaction was from that part of the community. The broad painting of sexuality in this thing is fucking great. Like, it's not like some of the characters are gay and some are straight, and like all the gay people are the same but all the straight people are the same. It is like in this gamut of queer and queer identifying people, there is like such a broad church from, like, you know, what that means. And so Abby Jacobson's character, this gives nothing away, this is very early on. It's during the war. Her husband's away at war. She comes and starts playing baseball and ends up in a, like, a same-sex relationship with one of the other players. So she's this person who's always been in this traditional relationship, who's kind of come into this world. You see her story. But the person that she's in the relationship with is someone who's been, like, living that lifestyle for a very long time. So their perspective, she's kind of on an adventure. This other person is someone who's had to hide their sexuality from the world and run from city to city and blah, blah, blah. So is in a very different place with their journey and who they are. And then they end up going to these, like, you know, gay clubs, or you're meeting these other characters. You have like butch identifying, femme identifying, people who are out, people who aren't out, in a team with people who believe that, like, you know, being queer is like something that you can catch, or is like, you know, that there are raids, it's against the law.
Yeah.
And then you're also following the story of this young black pitcher who wants to play and can't play because there's only the Negro leagues, as they would call them back then, and what that was about. And so you're exploring that as well. It's fucking great.
Right.
And even that thing of, like, you know, the old school studio note of, where are the middle-aged white men?
Yeah.
the movie, you know, is very much about, you know, Tom Hanks's character comes in and like teaches them all the lessons and all these sort of things. In right. this, and again, no spoilers, they have a character like that and you go, oh, this is where this is going to go. And then they fuck him off like really early on.
Oh, so right, that you're right. left
basically with these women. Like it's right. this incredible cast of women. Just like it's, I'm not saying it's going to win a bunch of awards or anything like that, but I think that what it does with such a, like just a really simple thing of going, here's a story that you kind of know, like yeah. speaking of taking something and like reinterpreting it, here's a story that you're familiar with. We're going to look at it a bit more realistically in that what would those stories really have been?
Right. You know? Yeah.
Like I think Rosie O'Donnell in the original movie said she played her character as if her character was gay, but it was never explicitly said that she was gay.
Yes.
Whereas in this, it is like they not only deal with the fact that so many of these characters are gay, but they deal with what that would have been like to live that life and how that life would have been lived within this context, which is fucking great.
Yeah.
And Rosie O'Donnell, again, no spoilers, is actually plays a different character in this reboot. And
I was about to ask that.
And it's really satisfying when it happens, is yeah. what I will say. So it's great.
So it sounds like it's an evolutionary step in the storytelling of this particular tale, because it originally, like when that movie came out, it was actually transgressive at right. the time, because yeah. it was a movie with, you know, lots of A-star actresses.
Yeah.
And
Madonna, Gina Davis.
Story. Yeah. You
know, like it was huge.
Yeah.
And Tom Hanks, you know, but yeah. it was a female first, but this was yeah. your classic. I mean, I know we were joking about it at the start, but this would have been one of those movies that when they originally pitched it, they're like, that's great.
Yeah.
But also Tom Hanks. So and we could put yeah. Tom Hanks on the poster.
Yeah. yeah.
This is how we're going to sell this movie.
Yeah.
This is the opposite of that.
Yeah. Great.
It's on Prime, I think, Amazon Prime.
Ah,
I think is
good.
Where I found that.
All right. I'm subscribed to all of these sites and I'm always excited to find a reason to go to it.
Yeah. No, I think that is.
One or two always drift yeah. off at some point, you know? Uh-huh. And it's like, oh, shit, I should justify that I pay for that each month.
Yeah. Well, this will be worth it for this month is what I would
yeah.
say.
All
I
right.
feel bad about giving my money to, you know, Jeff Bezos to have more fucking money, but
mate,
this time it's worth it.
Well, here's the thing. If I felt bad about my money going to any yeah. fucking asshole out there, I would miss out on a lot of quality.
Well, the assholes are running everything. And yeah. that's why your movie
taps into that.
Right. That's exactly. We understand, right. man.
Yeah.
We understand what's going on.
Yeah. It's tasty. It's so tasty. For any, I won't go into it because I know you haven't watched it, but for anyone who watched the Better Call Saul finale, it was a shout out to you guys. It was pitch perfect. I loved every second of it. And it's one of the all-time great landings of a series, I think. And I love that. You know how the Watchmen TV series kind of remixed the graphic novel, where you can read the graphic novel and it's standalone and you can watch the TV series and technically it does nothing to contradict the comic, but it just kind of gets in between the nooks and crannies and broadens that world. They managed to do that with Better Call Saul in relationship to Breaking Bad, and it was delicious. And it's one of the best final scenes I've ever seen in a TV show as well.
Yeah, I know. I mean, from what I heard, like all the characters from Breaking Bad are there and they are all on the phone and turn to the camera and say, "We better call Saul."
Yeah,
it was amazing.
That's it.
Like,
yeah.
What a great way to land it.
It was great. You know, Walt is kind of like in a Weekend at Bernie's with Jesse. You know, he's holding up his hand and waving it. It's great. It was quite emotional looking at Walt's rotting corpse. That would have been an amazing ending. finished in such an emotionally satisfying way.
Yeah, I am looking forward to diving back into that, back into that. There are some shows at the moment, just because of some life stuff that's happening with that we won't go into, but there's just some things that I can't, like, watch at the moment.
Yeah.
And that's one of them. The other one is I've been trying to watch The Rehearsal. Are you a Nathan? Have you watched that? Have you?
No, I've been so flat out, and it's on my to-do list because I've been watching Every time I've gone to watch it, something like The Sandman dropped, and I've been curious about that, so I've been watching.
What have you thought of The Sandman, by the way? Because Sandman is one of those ones that at the moment is, I know, is just, I need to be in a different mood to sit down and have a look at that. On the day that we're recording this, if the Bulldogs lose or if Carlton win, the Dogs are out of the finals, which might be a good time for me to stop watching football and start watching Sandman. But I have been saving that because I think that I will enjoy it. But have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, look, I'm four episodes in and I think it's pretty good. Like, you know, it's, of course, when you've lived with a text, like I read it issue to issue, month to month when it first came out. So, of course, there's aspects of it that you go, I don't know if I would have done it that way. But then there's other things that they've done that I've thought, oh, that's great. That's a really good choice. So I'll be broad about it because, you know, you haven't watched it yet and it's better to go in and make up your own mind and not have some niggling voice in the background saying, oh, Rooster's a bit weird now that he's dressing up like his dad.
Okay, so Nathan Fiora, I like Nathan for you a lot. And from what I've watched at a rehearsal, it's bold, so bold. It's like such a bold concept and a bold, like, but I find it at the moment, just because where I'm at, I will watch a bit of it and I'll be like, this is so good and so inventive and so full on. And then I'll just have to be like, I need to stop now. This is like,
time for a sandwich.
Really stressed and really like, and I know that's like the intention, but it's like so overwhelming that I'm just like, I'm going to have to get in a different headspace to be able to sit down and enjoy this.
It's one of those things that, you know, I think people underestimate watching things in the correct mood. Mm-hmm. Like I wanted to see Nope. I was going to see it. I wasn't quite in the mood. I waited. I went and saw it at the right time. Really enjoyed it. I just know if I'd seen it 4 days earlier, I would have gone, Nope. I wouldn't have been into it at all. But
I think that's part of A League of Their Own for me. I was looking for something that was going to be entertaining, like, you know, light and entertaining, but also like good, rather than just something that was like, you know, brainless. Although I did also watch an entire series of Iron Chef as well. Like that was, you know, that was the kind of real brainless sort of like, just, you know, kind of something in the background, but like A League of Their Own, I actually thought it was probably going to be lighter than it was, in that it like dealt with some really serious stuff in some really good ways, but none of it was like heavy going. You didn't take that heaviness with you. You were like, I'm really glad I watched that. That was really emotionally satisfying. It came to me at the right time. But yeah, it's a good in-between show. Like, not one of those shows where you, like, it's good on a level of like a good show.
Right.
But it's like entertaining on a level of, like, one of the things I love the most is it's a period piece where they get very much everything like enough right, but they haven't made them all speak ridiculously. They've all got like a little affect of the times rather than speaking like someone of the times. Like, there's language in it and writing in it that you're like, there's no way in the 50s somebody would have said that word or that. And I like that.
Yeah.
It's like, you haven't tried to remake these actors. Like, they all look like they're from that time, but they don't look like they're from that time.
You're
not pretending.
Yeah, you're not making a documentary. No. Like, you're making entertainment. So, you know, if you lean too much into it, suddenly it's like, and the baseball is about to happen. And
it would get in the way of the story they're trying to tell.
It
would become about the way they're speaking or who is nailing it, who isn't nailing it, or whatever it is. Whereas this is just like, no. We're telling a story and we've given you the flavor of the times and the, you know, the way they look and speak, but, you know.
Yeah, the HBO Perry Mason reboot did that well, I thought. So, yeah, you don't want to, because one false step and then it slides into caricature. So you want to avoid that.
Yeah, no, it's good. And I think Abby Jacobson is like an absolute star. Such a funny, funny person. Like, you know, anyway. Did you like Broad City? Were you a Broad City fan?
Yeah, I haven't watched that much of it, actually. Yeah. It was always one of those things. Once again, you know, sometimes you start watching something and you're enjoying it, and then you get busy, and for whatever reason, it's not detrimental to what you watch. You just lose the rhythm of it, and you don't get back to it. But it's always been there.
I mean, that was one of those shows that I just, like, adored. I thought just everyone in it was fantastic and just so funny and just, like, such a good, like, version of a – it really reminded me a lot of, like, that Flight of the Conchords. Like, I mean, in a different way, but, like, it just had that it's real, but it's not real, and it's kind of serious, but it's silly, and it's, like – yeah, anyway, whatever. Abby Jacobson. Well, that's my recommendation.
Shout out to Abby if you're listening. If you want to have a role in Creed 3, let us know. We can get you in there.
If you need a middle-aged white Australian man for one of your projects, I'm happy to be tossed out in the first episode. But just let me come in and go, there's no crying in baseball. And then you can just...
Great. Is that your American accent?
No, that was my Australian accent.
Oh, yeah, great. Yeah. White Aussie, middle-aged man commenting on baseball is perfect.
There's no crying in cricket, mate.
Yeah.
This is baseball. Oh, sorry. I'll send myself out.
Yeah.
Nice to work for you.
You can be Robert Murdoch. You can be Rupert Stad.
Oh, yes. All right. I don't mind that, actually. I could be some evil Australian businessman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's bought a baseball league?
Yeah.
Doesn't understand it's not cricket. And he keeps going, what's the wicketkeeper doing? And you're like, that's the catcher, actually, Dad.
Yeah. Why does he keep pitching full tosses?
Yeah, that bowler threw it.
Yeah.
Look at his thing.
This game would be heaps better if there were less Sheilas in it. Crikey. There's too many Sheilas.
There's no crikey in baseball.
Yeah. Write that down as the title for the episode.
Oh, yeah, there you go, Podcast Mike. There's no crikey in baseball is the name of this episode. Justin Hamilton, your podcast is called Big Squid. Tell us about some live shows that you're doing and your podcast and all those
things. Oh, yeah. So a few live shows we have in Adelaide. We're doing a live Big Squid show on the 16th of September. That's getting close to being sold out, and I can't really work out why. It's only got a lineup of you, Rove, Tom Gleason, Limo, Mickey D, Georgia Mooney, Ben Elwood, Adam Richard. There might be a couple of other people jumping up that we haven't announced yet. So that's happening on the 16th of September. Go to adelaidecomedy.com for that. Sydney and Melbourne, I'm doing my first solo show since before the pandemic, 1937, Spanish flu. That will be on the 28th of October in Sydney at the Sydney Comedy Store. And on
Can I just say, by the way, I thank you to everyone who came out and saw my Sydney Comedy Store shows and, of course, came to Melbourne to see Willogical being filmed. We didn't talk about. I was going to say the Sydney Comedy Store. Fuck, that's a great comedy room. I hadn't been there for a couple of years.
Oh yeah,
and I just could not have enjoyed my shows there more. Like it was just so fun. I'm looking forward to doing some more shows there. Hopefully, before the end of the year. you were going to be doing support for my Melbourne taping of Willogical.
Oh yeah, far out. That
and
feels
we
like
spoke about it. Last time you did
the
podcast, and we, of course, have we've completely forgotten to mention people who came obviously know that you were not there.
It feels like it was about 3 months ago.
It really does, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'll just finish this plug, 26th of November at the Comedy Republic. Go to comedy.com.au to find tickets for Sydney and Melbourne solo show Little Victories. Yes. So I had a mildly sore throat, and I was a bit sniffly, and I like to, you know, I don't just want to talk the talk. I want to walk it as well.
Exactly. So do the right thing.
Do the right thing. So I did the right thing, and I went and got a test, a proper test. Mm-hmm. I did two RAT tests. They were negative, but I thought I'm going to make
I'm
sure.
I'm going to get a PCR.
PCR. So I went on the Thursday. They said it would be back in 24 hours, which should have been like 2 p.m. on the Friday, and it did not come back at 2 p.m. Mm-hmm. It came through really late. Like really late on the Friday night. Mm-hmm. And it was, the exact word was indeterminate.
Indeterminate.
And I had to go and get another test. And by the time, because it was a Saturday, by the time I could get another test, look, I knew I was negative, but I thought I should do the right thing. So I cancelled doing it and I went and got the test and it came back within 8 hours and it was negative.
Yes. So, yeah.
Just not frustrating at all.
No, not at all. Anyway, Ben Lomas filled in, did a great job warming up the crowd. So a big thank you to Ben Lomas for doing that at late notice.
Yeah.
But very sad that you were not there. But I absolutely agree with your decision. You did. That's what people still should be doing. And I would still encourage people to.
Yeah.
This thing isn't over. And I understand that we need to, you know, get back to living life and all that sort of thing. But there are ways that we can still mitigate it. And it is by trying to do, you know, to do the right thing as often as you can. So,
oh, yeah. And I was like, you know, I was bummed out for a number of reasons because there was a lot of, apart from just the hanging out point of view, there was a lot of good things that were going to come of it too. And, but, you know, if you feel that way, sometimes you just got to back it up. So,
I think, I mean, absolutely did the right thing. And, I was sad not to have you there because it would have been a fun little show to have on the last night. And I hadn't been at the ass, it turned out, since like 2006 or something like that.
Wow.
To the show. So I went and saw Husey on the Saturday night, just because he was taping his thing on the Saturday night. So I wanted to get a bit of a vibe of what it felt like in the room and how all the cameras looked and blah, blah, blah. And it's so funny, like, because Husey and I, you know, we've known each other for a quarter of a century, Dave and I. And I watch his show, and so often we're kind of dealing, because we're dealing with the same period of time. We're both comedians who are like, hey, this thing happened, so here's my jokes and take on how this thing happened, and here's my jokes and take on how this thing happened and what the world is like. In some ways, the shows are very much, you know, the same. But, oh, my God, the takes could not be more different.
You did not have to tell me that. Is he all right?
They were so different. But no, here's what I'll say. Super funny.
Yeah.
Great example of how you can not necessarily agree with the point that somebody is making, but still find them incredibly funny. Like, his jokes were just so good. And he was like, you know, really, nailing them. But just not my take on those same things, you know. And it was fun to watch. So, So, all right. So, thank you very much for doing this today. You've got one more thing?
I got one more thing. So, which I don't know if I've told you, but the next season of Big Squid will start at the beginning of September. And we're kicking it off. I interviewed Brett Morgan, the director of the David Bowie documentary Moon Age Daydream. So, that will be kicking that off at the start of September.
It's very Columbo of you there at the end. Just one more thing. I can see, I can hear that you, Owen Wilson, doing that.
I feel like we nailed a lot of good things today.
All right.
Do you remember the moment that you became a millionaire? Because it just happened 30 minutes ago.
Thank you very much, Justin Hamilton.
Thank you.